Good morning, everyone. Today's webinar is called Best Practices for Intergenerational Mentoring. It's a conversation between the Alberta Mentoring Partnership and Linkages. Linkages has 25 years of success in working, connecting seniors and youth. So we're very pleased to have the Linkages Society of Alberta live with us on the webinar today to share with us some of their learnings and tips and tricks. So for those of you who have just got on the webinar, I encourage you to go to the sidebar and download the annual report for Linkages. It'll help answer some of your questions. And if you're listening to this webinar after the fact or listening to this audio as a podcast, we'll have the report attached on our website at albertamentors.ca/webinar as well. So what can your mentoring program learn about intergenerational programming? With changing demographics, aging populations, more and more Albertans are aging and looking for a way to create strong, thriving, age-friendly communities. What can your mentoring program learn from successful intergenerational programs like Linkages? How can you support your youth and senior mentors to share their gifts and experiences across generations? So today we're joined by the Linkages team, a Calgary-based intergenerational organization, for a conversation about the ins and outs of creating an impactful intergenerational programming. So we encourage you to sign on to albertamentors.ca and look at our other resources that will be complementary to this webinar, such as our Start a Community-Based Mentoring Program Toolkit, our online mentor training, our specialized resources for youth in care, Indigenous youth, refugee immigrant, newcomer youth, and many others. Our next webinar is on Monday, July 15th, and we'll be talking about youth workplace mentoring, how you can increase relationships with businesses in your community to ensure that youth can be served in the workplace and you can build strong relationships, not just for the youth, but also within your businesses and corporations who are supportive of great outcomes for youth in your community. So we encourage you to check that out. It'll be Monday, July 15th at noon. So we'll be running Lunch and Learn webinars all summer. The best way to learn about them and to sign up and to watch them or view them is visit albertamentors.ca and click on our newsletter. So before we get started, we just want to launch a quick poll. So we're going to ask you on the webinar today, are any of you currently running intergenerational programs? So it could be a mentoring program. It could be a different type of program. We're just interested for our presenters in what sort of a baseline of experience we have listening today. That's interesting. It's around, it's about 33% yes and about 67% no. So that's great. We think either one of you will be interested in the conversation today. So that's really good for our presenters to know, so they know what kind of audience that they're speaking to. So I'll do the introductions off the top. We're joined today by the Linkages team. We've got Ruby Lacotte, the executive director, Crystal Guzman, the school program coordinator, Betty Good, the school program coordinator and rural link coordinator, Dave Sorreo, who's the community initiatives coordinator, and Miriam Banke, who's the volunteer coordinator. So thank you all very much for joining us today and for sharing your learnings and for helping cross-pollinate these unique approaches to help engage more people across Alberta. So I saw a statistic that there are now more people on our planet who are over 65 years old than under 5 years old. So this could not be more timely for all of us to think about in terms of the longevity of our program. So Ruby, I thank you so much for joining us and maybe we can just start right at the top with a definition. How would you describe what an intergenerational program is?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having us today, and hello to everybody who's joining us. Linkages defines an intergenerational program as any program that intentionally builds relationships between different generations. Most typically, we kind of do a generation jump, so perhaps grandparent age with grandchildren age. The vast majority of our programs involve seniors that are 55 years and older, and youth that range in age from 10 to 24.
And so maybe could you also share with us an overview of Linkages and what sort of sets your program apart? What makes you unique?
I sure can. So first, a little bit about us. Linkages, as you had said, we've been around for 25 years, and our program started 25 years ago as a single school and senior care center visitation program, and it's grown and evolved over time. We now have 15 school and care center programs that my colleagues will talk about, and community programs running in five different neighborhoods of the city, doing a variety of intergenerational programming. We also provide training and knowledge sharing and participate in research, both in Calgary, across the province, and even internationally now. Tomorrow we have a Skype call with Russia with a volunteer program there, so that's very exciting. And we'd love to hear about different things that people across the world and province are doing. So we're very happy to talk to the audience today. We think what makes us unique is a few things. As I said, we focus on building longer-term intergenerational relationships. So our programs are not one-off visitations. We build relationship between a senior and a youth, and they visit often not only for a whole year, but sometimes for up to 3 years. So they really develop long-term relationships. We focus on the reciprocity of learning. So it's coming from a view that both seniors and youth have tons to offer, and we see that they bring out the best in each other. And the other thing is that we run all of our programs through a little bit of a curriculum, because we found that when seniors and youth learn together, it really sets the stage for those mentoring conversations to happen and the situations to occur where they can talk about lived experience and shared experience. And as they're learning new skills, they can talk about how those things might be the same or different, and it just really opens the door for richness and diversity. And I think a few other things that make us unique is that we're mobile. So we operate out of a very small office, but we go out into the community where seniors and youth naturally gather and tend to build programs there. And try to make our programs also as inclusive as possible. So for that, we need to be very adaptable, which is something I think we do well. So regardless of the location or the diversity of ages and cultures, we tailor our programs so that they're applicable to all. In a
Yeah,
nutshell.
no, that's excellent. I had one other question. What is sort of your program funding model? How are you supported by mostly fundraising, provincial governments, partner contributions?
That's a really good question. So we're a bit of a mixed bag, and we're very creative, I think, in our funding. So the smallest percentage of our funding is fundraising. The largest percent is civic and provincial funding. And we are applying for a little bit of national funding. And for anyone who's looking to offer mentoring programs, I know funding is always an issue. But one of the things that I think mentoring is absolutely amazing for is that it helps to meet indicators around mental health, around education, around wellness, inclusion, and all of those things. So if you can kind of think with the mentoring lens, you really fit in a lot of funding buckets. And so that's really opened the door for us to expand our funding base.
Yeah, no, that's great. And for anyone who's following along, if you want to check out their website, it's www.link-ages.ca. So you can check that out and see more information as our presenters are sharing today. And as well, can I introduce Crystal to the school program coordinator, and Betty Good, the other school program coordinator, co-coordinator, and rural link coordinator, to ask you both a couple questions as well too. We've got a kind of a musical chairs thing going today. So we love school-based programs. We think they're excellent and are very often most popular in Alberta, because many of our communities have a school. Where there's youth, there's schools. And we wanted to hear more. I understand that Linkages started just as one single school program. Can you tell us about how your school programming has evolved?
Yeah, sure. So first of all,
I'll just kind of describe what school programs are. They're a type of intergenerational program that are designed to create friendship, skills, and ultimately long-term relationship between the two generations, the senior and the youth. The goal is for youth to kind of build their skills, both interpersonal and interpersonal, through communication. They build their self-esteem, things like that. And the goal for seniors is to kind of have a purpose in their life. They feel more valued as they're mentoring youth. They feel like they're adding on to somebody else's well-being. So the mentorship really goes both ways in that in the school programs, the youth teach seniors skills as digital, such as digital skills, and then the seniors mentor youth throughout giving advice and just being there for them. So as you were saying, yeah, Linkages started with one school program 25 years ago, and we now have 15 school programs across the city with kids as young as 10 years old in grade 5 up to grade 12 in the school program specifically. And what we do, Betty and I, is we go to schools to recruit the students. We train them before sending them off to care centers, as there's topics that are associated with dementia and just learning how to speak with seniors. And then we pair two kids with one senior for 7 months, and they meet either bi-weekly or weekly to build on that relationship throughout time. We also provide activities for them. They're designed to create those relationships. We start off with kind of icebreaker activities and build on to learn about themselves, learn about each other, and then expand on the community. And Betty here will talk about kind of the evolution, how it, the curriculum has changed to what it is now, which is called From Me to We to Community.
Okay, what we used to do is our focus was just during the program, the students and the seniors would have fun. Wasn't going to be like school or a classroom. So the focus was as long as they have fun, everybody's happy. But then we realized, okay, we've got a lot of outcomes that we want the seniors and the youth to have. So we looked at all the outcomes and then we designed our curriculum intentionally. So now instead of just having fun activities, we do try to make them fun. But they are, and there's stuff. They're very interesting and they're intentional. So Crystal said, me to we to community. So for example, at the beginning, our activities are focused on helping them to get to know themselves and each other. And then how to be sensitive towards each other and how to care about each other. And then from there, on to community. And so how can they impact the community and how can they think about the community? An example of that is, well, first of all, you think of residents in long-term care centers, how can they impact community? And one way they can do that is just by impacting the people around them and their staff. And also some of them, they do go out into the community. But one example of one activity that we did, we have an organization in Calgary called Brown Bagging for Kids. And they make lunches for children in schools that may come to school without a lunch. And so what we did in all of our programs, one of our activities was they had a brown, each participant had a brown bag and they had to decorate it and then write a little note of encouragement to tuck inside. And then Crystal and I delivered them 400 plus to the organization, and then they put their lunches in the bags and the students received these bags. So that was one of the favorite activities among the participants because they knew that they were doing something for somebody else.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I had a question about evaluation. In a school, in your school programs, how do you sort of evaluate success?
We have feedback, we call them pre and post surveys. And we give the pre surveys to the students and then at the end of the program, the post surveys. So we actually get a lot of comments and the way that we word the questions, we find out from the youth if they have received some benefit from the program. And the feedback is very specific. And then at the end of May, we also give feedback forms to the seniors. And so that's how we gather and measure.
And that's how also our programs evolve. The kids, the youth and the seniors give us ideas, what worked, what didn't work. And that's how we kind of make our programs better without.
Yeah, that's great. And to clarify, is the programming taking place in the school or in the community or both? And if so, how do you manage transportation challenges?
Okay, because we go to the care centers. First of all, we go to the schools and recruit the students, and then we go to the schools and we do sensitivity training so that they understand more about seniors and how aging works. And then once we've done all that, then the students go to the care centers and we provide busing if they need busing. Some of them are close enough to walk. Some of them are after school, so we provide busing to the care center and then the parents pick them up or they can answer.
Oh, that's, yeah. No, that's good to know. That's a question we frequently get about sometimes just the logistics of moving people around.
It would be too difficult to move the seniors to the schools because a lot of them are wheelchairs. But having said that, one of our programs, the school has a spring tea. And so the care center hires the Calgary Transit and they take all of the seniors who are in our program to the school and then they perform for us and offer tea and cookies. It's really nice.
Could you tell us more about the sensitivity training, what that looks like and what sort of topics you cover?
Okay, we talk a lot about what it's like to age. So we have a training package. It's okay, you're over there. We have a training package where we give them rubber gloves that have duct tape around the fingers and thumb. We give them, you know, dollar store glasses with markers or tape on them. We put cotton in their ears. We give them a pill bottle with a candy inside. And then they have to try to open this pill bottle and also read the directions on it. And so it gives them an idea of what it's like as people age and they can't hear very well and their eyesight is not as good as it used to be. They may have arthritis or joint stiffness. So we have activities like that. We have another one where they actually imagine that they experience loss in their lives and that relates back to the seniors that they will engage with, and they've lost a lot in their lives before they end up in a care center. And we have another activity that helps them to understand the processing in the brain slows with age. And the activity is, that one is really impactful, helps the kids understand that.
That's I think really, I think that's really good for all of us to consider and to know. So thank you for sharing. Dave, we had a couple questions for you as well about evolving from school programs. Oh, the musical chairs again.
We're going in a new one.
So the community programming that you do, can you talk about that and maybe how it differs from the school programming and how you manage some of the logistics of that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Because school is our flagship, one of the big things that we learn a couple of things from them. Obviously, with the big thing from care centers, we learn a sense of empathy. Students get that. There's a connectionist because it's a full year, two semesters that they kind of go through that program and they start becoming connected, which helps them with the two things that Linkages really tries to deal with, which is bias of ageism and social isolation. So the more they feel like they're connected to kids, the more they like kids, the more they feel their purpose, not so segregated from that, which is kind of a really neat thing. And I'm sure as everybody else is watching, one of the biggest things is relationships. Everybody knows that as you gain relationships, you feel more comfortable and more secure and safer. So trying to put that into the community, we recognize that we're not dealing with 18-year-olds that are looking to help seniors at their last point of life. We're looking at seniors that are very active, we're looking at students that maybe have more of a vulnerable need. And so those different categories really changes the dynamic of the programs we're trying to do. Yeah, I think that's really kind of how the community differs from school, but with the same school attributes. And so we look at, from mental health research, there's three ways that we're really noticing that relates to our needs of helping, dealing with mental health. And one is social isolation. Obviously, we want to reduce social isolation in order to improve mental health. One is critical thinking. Critical thinking helps mental health, helps with dementia, as does creativity. So a lot of the programs we try to design are built on those things, whether it's a leadership program or that we're doing critical thinking about self-esteem and socio-emotional, which are really neat because you would think that the seniors mentoring the students would be the ones that know these things. But a lot of the students probably grew up with a better awareness of self-esteem and self-care that seniors never had. So even though it'd be a mentorship on the kids being vulnerable, the reaction was actually that a lot of the seniors learned that maybe their communication skills weren't as good as they thought they were because they just grew up with people that yelled at them. So they just thought that's what they should do. And knowing that there's different ways to communicate was really surprising. So you'll find those things in community programs where it isn't as linear. This person's helping this. It's a lot more of a mix. The relationships grow, and we really try to focus on geographic. So we want to know that the senior and the kids are kind of close in proximity, so they become neighbors and they become more comfortable with their neighbors, which gives them a little bit more security in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think it would be a very intuitive way to help set up the program. Can you tell us about how you choose which community or which communities to work with? How do you sort of triage?
Yeah, that's a pretty good question. That's always a tough one. Most people that are trying to build a program for intergenerational usually have one. So you would be a teacher that has a school. So you already have a group of youth and you're trying to pair that with a senior. I find the communities that have lower income, they probably require a lot more community service. They're more used to that. As we get richer, we kind of create our own islands. So those higher economic communities probably have a harder time with isolation, the fact that they feel more comfortable being alone as you have more money and you need less. So lower income communities, I find, are really good in the fact that more people are interested in creating community things because they have higher needs and they recognize they need people more. But there's always good things of knowing your community, knowing where your senior associations are, where your schools are, what groups are mentoring, because there's always groups of people within your community that are trying to make an engagement. And that's even going to your community associations to kind of find those things out.
So you work with the Federation of Calgary Communities?
We do.
Yeah. I know Calgary and Edmonton have sort of an established neighborhood-based culture, and that's an option. I had a question about cultural diversity. Some of our youth I think one high school in Edmonton had 130 different national backgrounds of their students. And how do you mix, match, or include cultural awareness or sensitivity training in intergenerational relationships?
It's not as hard as you would think. I think if we start programs, especially with the leadership program, we'll usually start with a student sensitivity training and a senior sensitivity training. So we'll use what Betty uses for school for the students. And when they approach into that program, they recognize that they're volunteering and they're lending support to seniors. And we do the same thing with the senior group that are looking for mentors so that they get a sense of where kids are at these days and how they're different, because not all seniors are dealing with youth these days. So just kind of bridging that gap and giving them a sense of purpose that they're helping, that always lets people walk into that thing with purpose and something that's beyond themselves, which is a fantastic way to start a program. If people just kind of walk in without the training, they'd probably be a lot more me-focused. But when you're kind of volunteering your time and you look at it as a way that you're helping the community, a lot of people are more outward-focused and a lot more open. So that's a really good way to deal with that. Then you can add a lot of different cultures into it for sure. Especially with the mentorship stuff, like adding those things in, but making sure it's general. Think people feel defensive if you start to get too specific within things when you have a diverse group. You want to become quite simple on biases and recognize biases that are harmless, like the difference between left-handed people and right-handed people, or something where there's not really a huge, at this point in time, political climate, where you could still show a bias that would go one way or the other. And that helps with everybody getting a recognizing cultural difference or differences without having to put it onto a culture or a gender.
Yeah. That's helpful. What do you do in terms of background checks? For the seniors, I mean, we in many mentoring programs, we're big advocates on doing child welfare checks, police background checks, et cetera, especially when a child and an adult are going to be alone in an isolated setting. Do you follow similar protocols?
I'm sure that you're going to have Miriam Banky talk to you and my colleague, and she's the volunteer coordinator, so she might get a little bit more into that. But for our programs themselves, we usually do, I'll do like a pre-interview for our leadership ones just to make sure. But the kids and the youth and the seniors, and this happens in our school programs too, they're told in the training sessions not to trade contact information until after the program with us and the parents. So we have had great offboarding stories where after running a program, a youth and a senior wanted to hang out. And so what we would do is we would have a meeting with the student's parents and a friend of the senior to make sure both sides had like recognized that this is a place where this student might hang out in the future. And so the parent was aware of who that person was. And so she could sign off on that. So we're kind of diligent in making sure our programs don't lead into vulnerable situations, but most of our programs are kind of built as groups in public situations and not private. We're going to work towards more of an outreach program in the future, but that will have probably a lot harder screening than what we're doing for our main programs.
And do you aim for a similar duration in a community program as a school program in terms of the 1 year, 3 year opportunity?
I think community uses a little more diversity. So you could run an afternoon after school program, you can run like an art program, but in order to get the students and the seniors, I found that you still want to run on the same schedule as semesters. It's easier to run that way instead of having one run from May till July where people are in school and busy. And if you run an after school program, you want to run it congruent with a semester. It's easier to recruit that way. And then it's consistent too, because if you go between semesters, students that would have availability for a certain time in one semester might not have that in the following. So to be able to continue that is probably wise.
No, that's, thank you. Thank you for that, Dave. And at this time, I'll ask those of you on the chat, if you have questions, you're welcome to type them into the chat box and I'll ask them on your behalf. We'll save the questions to the end, but I will try and integrate them into the presenters as well. And I had another question for Betty about rural Alberta. I recognize some of the names on the webinar are from our rural Alberta friends. And I know we get questions about, especially in rural areas, how do we get programming started? And so Betty, can you tell us about how I see that Linkages is moving out of Calgary into some rural areas as well too. How are you managing that expansion?
Okay, so initially, or in the past few years, we've been asked to go to rural areas like small cities or towns and do training. So we go and kind of train the trainer and explain to them, take them through a day of workshops about how to do their own intergenerational program. And one that we did last fall, somebody said, we want to be a Linkages chapter, because it's really hard on your own without anybody, you know, helping you to just kind of start this, especially after they'd seen what we did. They thought, well, if they can tap into what our knowledge and our experience. And so we got funding for a Rural Link program. So what we do now is we're just starting. but we're choosing towns or cities that are remote enough that they don't have any support from bigger centers. So what I do, I'll go and I'll meet with, for example, the FCSS staff, if there are some, or some key people in the community that their role is to establish programs in the community. And I'll meet with them, we'll do an assessment of their community, what are the challenges, what are the needs, and how do they want a program to look. So we kind of walk through what we do and how can we adapt that, or how can we create something brand new for them. And then all of our resources are available to them. And basically what I would do is I hold their hand at first with all the planning and walk them through every step of the way. And then once they're established and the programs are established, then I can step back and they can do it on their own. But we won't walk away and let them fall. We'll just be there every step of the way until we can see that the program there is successful and impactful.
Do you find the concerns you get from the seniors about social isolation are greater in rural communities and there's more of a willingness to explore creative programming?
Oh, good question. I haven't really thought about that because we're just so new. We just started our pilot. And you'd almost think it would be, but I can't really answer that.
It's interesting. We hear about it from the youth a lot too, about the feelings of social isolation and wanting new opportunities that are sometimes harder to provide. So we're trying to think about new and unique mentoring models, and it naturally makes sense that we should be looking at the other end of the generation as well, and trying to think about how we can work together. So we'll certainly be putting other folks in touch with you for those workshops.
Back to your other question, I'm thinking too, in smaller communities, there wouldn't be as many options as there are in big cities. And so this is what we want.
Yeah, and one of the main concerns we often hear is the transportation challenges. If you miss the bus, you're stranded at school for an hour. So, you know, there's usually when we're dealing with our small centers, we need to think more about overcoming some of the logistics and transportation challenges that we can mitigate in a better way in community programming in the city. So, yeah. No, that's most helpful. And again, if people are interested in learning more about the workshop you speak of, how should they get in touch with you?
Oh, we've got contact information. So just email us and say you're interested in a full day of training. We'll get back to you and then we'll contact you and talk about what your needs are and how we can arrange something.
And for those of you listening to the audio, you can reach Linkages at info@link-ages.ca. So yeah, thank you for that, Betty. And Miriam, can we talk a little bit about volunteer ups and downs? So across Alberta, we're talking about volunteer shortages and how to get more people engaged in volunteering. And also on the flip side, we're talking about aging demographics and more Albertans entering retirement age and healthy and happy and living longer and looking for a shared purpose and a way to give back in their communities. So it seems like you would be the busiest person in Calgary. How do you and what is a really small team at Linkages support all of these different programs? What's your secret sauce?
The secret sauce. Well, yeah, it's always, again, I'm always so amazed by the interest and energy that comes from volunteers here in Calgary. I find that there is I don't have exact numbers, but a huge amount of really interested volunteers that step up to a whole bunch of different opportunities here in Calgary, which is really great. I know for us, it's invaluable, the hours and the care and the time spent by our volunteers. And we really couldn't do these programs without them. Just looking at in this past in 2019, we have over 1,400 hours of volunteer service. which has been amazing. And what that looks like, that's looked like, you know, helping out, you know, helping with learn how to use a cotton candy machine for our intergenerational day this past year, or helping facilitate for community programs and lots of different things. And those 1400 hours don't even include the school programs that we have in those 15 care centers around the city. So definitely we couldn't do the amazing work that we do without those fantastic volunteers.
Yeah. Where do you, what do you find is your best, because you're asking for a bigger commitment. It's not just coming out for a weekend to set up tables. You're asking for something quite serious, which is building a relationship with a young person. And what do you find is the most effective pitch that you give?
The pitch. Well, it's interesting too, right? So I think that one of the nice things, and I'll get back to it, but one of the nice things is that we do actually have some different opportunities. So we have shorter term opportunities, let's say for special events or helping out with administrative pieces in the office, which are a lot less of a commitment. And then we also within the community programs, that there's some that are a 6-week, once a week duration. So that makes it a little bit easier. But the school programs for sure, you know, where it is about deepening and galvanizing those relationships, that it is important to find somebody that's going to be able to commit to that year program and be there alongside of them developing the relationships. So how does that happen? Like, what's the secret sauce? You know what? I'm not too sure. I think that like everything, I think that building relationships is one of the most important things. And our approach definitely for recruiting and maintaining volunteers is really strength-based, right? So when we chat, you know, we'll put out postings through the channels and communicate with folks. And we take the time at the beginning to really sit down and find what it is that they're interested in and really find out what their strengths are, and try and find a good fit, whether it's in community programs or school programs for that. And it's always, you know, kind of in both areas, thinking about the volunteers that come in that are seniors and the volunteers that come in that are youth. It's always so amazing how receptive and engaged and excited they are to participate. It's you know, we've got a nice flow and a nice amount of people coming in, and it hasn't been as tough as you might think it would be, which is great. So makes my job a little bit easier.
One of the things you've talked about, I've heard you say before, is talking about how it's a two-way street, and how it's not just the senior helping the youth, it's the youth also helping the senior, and both are expected to share their gifts and both have valuable experiences. So can you talk a little bit more about that, about how you support this?
Yeah, of course. So thinking about, you know, in that sort of strength-based way and creating opportunities where people can share their gifts and their experiences and their expertise, you know, I think that we create a really rich volunteer culture in a few different ways. You know, I think that there's one side of it where we provide a bunch of training. So I know that some of the team has talked about the sensitivity training that happens, but I think that there's also more ways that we provide training to empower volunteers. Thinking about things that we do around providing supports for dementia training. I know that there's some great resources that we've shared with volunteers around aging and mental health, just to support them in those relationships and to have the skills and the tools to be able, and again, for seniors and for youth, to support these programs. One of the pieces that, you know, that we do is, again, as we get to know the volunteers and what their interests are, also figuring out what sort of trainings and learnings would be advantageous to them. So thinking about, you know, a volunteer that I met with a little bit ago and, you know, figuring out how her experience was going, she was interested in having a little bit more training around facilitation. So building within sort of that training process, some opportunities for volunteers to sort of sharpen their tools, so that they can do their volunteer positions even all that much better. So that's one of the ways. I know, and I've talked about it before, but I think one of the really, really important things is just sort of creating space to connect and to get to know each other, and keeping the lines of communication open is always really important. Sort of in a little bit around training, that I think also too that, you know, providing opportunities for volunteers to get to know what Linkages is about. So not only explaining sort of our history and what we've done, but really going in and sharing with volunteers that are interested around our values and our mission, so that they can understand that and understand the outcomes that we are moving towards and really sort of jump on board with that, realizing that there's such a significant piece in achieving those outcomes. And really also too, you know, having, you know, feeling that connection to the important work that they do. And the last piece too, that I think is, you know, is one of the most important pieces to, you know, to create this positive and vibrant volunteer culture really is this, you know, the piece around celebration and recognition. I think it's always so very important to recognize the efforts of volunteers. You know, I say a whole bunch of times where I think that time is the most valuable thing that we have, and what a powerful thing for volunteers to be able to give that to our organization, right? It's a pretty important thing. So we are, you know, always sort of creating a feedback loop where volunteers, you know, and part of the evaluation where we ask volunteers around how they like to be recognized. So I think that that's, I guess, part of the secret sauce. I think sometimes, you know, you get into a loop where you're, you know, having volunteer parties and dinners and going bowling or whatever it might be. But I think also the piece of asking is quite vital in that, and asking really in which way, because there's many different types of volunteers, many ages that are coming for different reasons. And, you know, for some volunteers, they might, and their recognition and their, you know, what they want out of it might just be being able to see numbers, right? And the impact and what it looks like in that sense. And they don't want a gift card. They don't want a party. But really, that's the thing that's going to fill them up where they know that they've done a good job. All that said, though, we still like some good parties and opportunities to celebrate the amazing team of people that make all this work happen.
Yeah, no, that's great. And, you know, we used to talk about the quantifying the, you know, through mentoring programs, this many students are more successful in school, have a higher rate of academic success, less likely to do drugs and alcohol and maladaptive behaviors. But more and more, we're trying to equally talk about in a mentoring relationship, these are the reported benefits that the mentors have reported, that they're doing better in work and life and relationships and family and everything. So I'd be interested in your pre and post survey data on the mentors as well too. And some of, I don't know if you have any stories on hand about success or the impact on the mentor side.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot actually. Just thinking about one of the programs that pilot program that just went on in winter and fall or winter spring. And it was pretty amazing. The whole group was quite engaged. It was a program within community that was really focused on social emotional learning. And it was, you saw that magic happen, not only, and you saw that reciprocity happen. So not only, it wasn't going one way. The success was seen on the impact of the youth and on the seniors. And I think about one of the seniors that was there. And I remember at the beginning, and as we were doing, you know, the sensitivity training at the beginning, and I remember her kind of, she was like, you know what, I'm just here for something to do. You know, I don't know. And I remember saying, she was like, I don't really like kids too much. And we were like, okay, well, we're going to keep an eye on that. But that's all right. Like, we know the impact of it. And, you know, from week to week, I remember at the end of each topic and session, she would come over and express the benefit that it had. And I remember this one week where we were talking about healthy communication within the group. And I remember at the end that she came over and expressed, and she was saying, you know, I wish that I had these tools years and years ago, because it would have made a significant difference in my life and the relationship with my daughter. And it was huge, right? So it definitely made an impact on her. And we discussed how, like, you know, and I asked her if it was something where still she could use these tools around healthy communication with her daughter, and she expressed that she was keen to do so. So It's a small story, but definitely there is a lot of reciprocity and there is a lot of impact for the youth and the seniors.
We had a question about, just very, very, on a very practical level, who do we contact at a senior center or who do we contact in a seniors organization?
So that sounds like a really good Betty question, as she has, she's the touch point for a lot of the aged care centers. So I might let somebody else take that for the best way. I bet you Ruby's going to slide in here too. So
musical question. The rec therapists often are the best contact at a care center or the activity conveners, whomever that person is in the care center is a really good, great place to start.
Yeah. So usually that contact person is available and you can talk to them they'll have more information on the center and how to proceed.
Absolutely, and the often in schools or even in faith communities, if you can find kind of a champion for the programs that sees the value of mentoring and intergenerational programming, then really you're off to the races. The programs are really hard to move forward without the support of the schools, community, or care centers. So the folks that are in charge of creating the activities for the seniors, that's your best place.
There's a question about it. Are the care centers, do they provide a financial contribution to the program or how else do they support the partnership?
Most of them do support financially with what they're able to. We're lucky enough to receive Alberta Gaming and Liquor Commission casino dollars. And that supports with our busing, but the care centers support, as I said, sometimes financially. Their staff are often there with us during the program helping out. They contribute food and different things towards the wind-up parties and programs throughout the year. And they really help us a lot. As Miriam said, it's their time often that is the biggest support that makes the difference to our program.
Yeah. So maybe, Ruby, one question, I guess, kind of to wrap it all up. We have your annual report. I encourage everyone to read that. I'm sure it'll answer more of these questions. But if you had to, looking at Alberta 10 years from now, where we're going, we see changing demographics, aging populations, more issues around social isolation and dementia, precarious work conditions for sort of the missing middle of families who may or may not have the same time and ability to connect with their elder loved ones. Can we talk a little bit more about impact and how do you see your impact currently and how do you see your impact growing as we move ahead?
Sure. I know when you list all those stats, it sounds kind of depressing, but we often say that we have some of the best jobs in the world because we actually get to see the antidote to all of those issues, which we believe very firmly is intergenerational connections. And for me, what I see that kind of our secret sauce being is actually the draw of the different generations. So we find the youth are often more interested in programs that involve seniors than they are interested in peer-to-peer groups. And for the seniors as well, in the care centers, we hear innumerable times that they won't go to any of the other programs except ours. So in knowing that there's not just a need, but I think a want that kids are really wanting and missing those intergenerational connections, and so are seniors. So I think the more that we can do towards intergenerational mentoring and make sure that kids and youth and seniors stay connected and learn from each other, we know from our programs that our outcomes are, for both youth and seniors, improved mental and emotional health, reduction in isolation both ways. A lot of our youth, as you had mentioned, report isolation as an issue as well. That for our seniors, even just in the nature of the tactile games, as you had mentioned, that they're practicing fine and gross motor skills, and cognitive skills that help them to live longer, healthier lives. We know from research that seniors that have lots of strong community connections live healthier, longer lives. So they are able to live independently longer. And for kids, it's the same thing. Kids that have strong community connections are far more resilient and better able to kind of recover from adverse childhood experiences. And we see reduction in bias, increase in understanding and inclusion. There's just really, I think the team would agree. I don't think there's a downside to intergenerational programming. It's just really amazing. And we use the word magic a lot, which is not very quantifiable. But when you bring generations together, it really is magic to see how they bring out the best in each other.
Yeah. I thought, Ruby, you'd be pleased to know that one of our webinar participants today is Harry from Johannesburg, South Africa. And so your message is not just going across Alberta, but also around the world. So while I would love to invite Harry for a site visit to come and see the Calgary Tower and the Rocky Mountains, Harry has asked about places to find intergenerational toolkits or training or resources online. I know this, I believe the city of Calgary and I think the Alberta government have been working on more toolkits and different digital resources, but are there places that you would point a global friend who is short on air miles?
Yeah, we'll see what we can do about pooling our air miles. Maybe we can get to Johannesburg.
Even better, yeah.
Yeah, I do know that currently we're the Alberta government, as you had said, is in the process of creating a toolkit that's not complete yet. Neither is our own. We are just in the process of updating our website, and we've relaunched and are finished editing. So within, I would say, 3 months, we'll have a toolkit on ours. I do know there is an older toolkit that is on the British Columbia government website that you can Google and make use of the resources.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. And I invite all participants wherever you are to email info@link-ages.ca. And to connect with Linkages directly if you have other needs for training opportunity or questions, et cetera, and to be obviously respectful of their overwhelming workload that they already have, but their abundant enthusiasm for sharing the good news. So thank you so much. I guess at this time, I'll do one other call for questions from the audience. And if not, finally, I the last question I had was, around kind of the arc of the year. Do you mostly start programs in September and wrap them up in June, or do you kind of keep things going year round?
That's a really good question. So the school programs for sure follow the school year, which in Canada is September to end of June. We do have community programs that run throughout the summer as well.
Thank you. And sorry, we have one other question here. A question here from Kimberly asking about what kind of special events have been hosted for Intergenerational Day that have been successful? Yeah, so looking for ideas there.
Their Intergenerational Day is a really fun one. So it happens on June 1st every year. This year, I would encourage, do you remember what the hashtag was?
#IGDayCanada.
#IGDayCanada. If you look that up, you may be able to pull up some of the events. There were events this year happening in Victoria, Calgary, of course, with us. In Ottawa, had their first Intergenerational Day event. What we found to be the most successful are community barbecues that bring community out and generations together and just focus on the fun and the connection and providing a little bit of education, but food always brings people out. That is our experience.
Yeah, I think that's true of all communities. The people follow the food. So yeah, that's great. I just want to say thank you so much to the Linkages team for being so generous with your knowledge and wisdom and for sharing with all of us today. This presentation will be available as an audio podcast on the Mentoring Minute podcast, as well as on our YouTube channel, and we'll be sharing it. We frequently get questions about how to expand and enhance mentoring programs around Alberta, and in particular in rural communities. So hearing the wisdom of working with intergenerational populations, I think, could not be more timely as we look ahead. So thank you all so much for not just coming on today, but for all the work you do for old and young people in Alberta. So we're very, very grateful for your time. And again, thank you to everyone for tuning in today. And we look forward to hearing what you do to mobilize these learnings.
Thank you very much.
Well, with that, have a wonderful week, and we hope to see some of you again on Monday for our next webinar on workplace mentoring relationships, how to connect the corporations, faith groups, unions, government centers, how do you get workplace mentoring working in your community? So thanks again to the Linkages team. Have a great week, everyone.
And closing.